This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to the season 4 finale of The Joy of Text, a podcast about Judaism and sexuality. I'm here with our hosts, Rabbi Dov Linzer, President and Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah Rabbinical School, and Dr. Batsheva Marcus, Clinical Director at Mays Women's Health. I'm Rebecca Honig-Friedman, and I'm very sad to tell you that this will be my last episode as moderator and producer of the podcast.
What? You're leaving?
Yeah. We're all listeners.
Sorry to tell you this today, guys.
We've been working on this for a while, but we're very sad to lose Rebecca. She's been like a treasure for us.
Aw, that's really sweet of you to say. I'm very sad to be leaving as well. But before we say our goodbyes, I'm grateful to have one last discussion with you guys.
That's coming up after this message from our sponsor.
With over 125 musmachim in the field, Yeshivat Chovavei Torah is committed to training a new generation of modern Orthodox rabbis. Jason, you're a rabbi in training. What's your perspective?
It was precisely the musmachim of Yeshivat Chovavei Torah that drew me to the yeshiva. The tremendous diversity of work that they're engaged in and the underlying love of and commitment to the Jewish people really inspires me.
Thanks, Jason. If you'd like to apply or schedule a visit, go to yctorah.org.
Earlier in the season, we did an episode where we talked about common myths and misconceptions about Judaism and sexuality, and it was so much fun. We're doing it again. So let's jump
in.
Myths and misconceptions, we got myths.
So many things that people are confused about. So here we go. Let's get started with one I hadn't heard actually before we discussed this. that a woman can't ask for sex, but if she does, the man can't say no. I should say the wife.
So I just want to say that I had a patient once who was she was Hasidish, and she said, I'm trying to remember the context in which she said it, but it was a huge issue. Like, she could never express wanting to have sex because she had learned straightforward. She could never express when she wanted to have sex because if she did, he had to say yes. And that was an unfair position to put him in. Mm-hmm. So therefore she never, ever could communicate when she wanted sex.
So this, I'm going to say, is definitely a myth because, and I don't know. And I've heard like serious, you know, rabbis say this. It doesn't reflect where this discussion comes from in the Gemara. It's connecting two things that really were separate. The Talmud says that a husband has an obligation to have sex with his wife when he sees that she wants to have sex, that she's desirous. Either she's signaling him or he should be able to figure it out based on context, although men aren't always picking up signals, so sometimes you have to be a little bit more, you know, more direct. And he has a mitzvah to have sex with her. It never says that if she says it explicitly, he has to listen, and if she doesn't say it explicitly, he can ignore it. It actually says when it's clear that she wants to have sex, whether she's being explicit or not, he has a mitzvah to have sex with her.
That's a positive commandment. He's not allowed to not.
Well, actually, it's conceptualized as a positive. It actually is based on a verse that says, "Onata lo yigra," to hold back from her due. And particularly her due is not just the periodic sex at a certain periodic basis, but also specifically when it's clear that she wants to be having sex. There's another Gemara that never is in conversation with this first one that says that a woman should not be demanding sex from her husband because this is a brazen act, and it's
just
not sanua. It's
immodest. In a brazen way. She should not ask for sex.
Well, the Gemara just says not demand sex. It says, but what about Leah? Leah went out to Yaakov and
said,
that
was pretty brazen.
Eli Tavo, you should come to me, to my tent. So, you know, it says, well, okay, you can send a lot of very, very clear hints. You know, she didn't say, you must have sex with me tonight. She says, you're coming to my tent tonight. You know, so.
She didn't grab him by the necktie,
right.
Yank him in.
Exactly. So, you know, you can't demand it. And that gets to whole question. Questions about tsniut and how we think about that, particularly in the context of sex, which is a much larger discussion. You know, does the man like to sort of feel that the woman is sending him signals, like a little bit more to be the pursuer, you know, or so it might have something to do with that dynamic, but it is not because if she's explicit, then that sort of, then that puts him in a bind.
Right, they're not related to each other.
Right.
But so, there is truth to both sides.
Truth to both sides, but they're not connected. I think it's dangerous to connect them, because I think, as you know, you indicated, it leads to a woman thinking like, I can't even let him know that I want to have sex, you know?
Right. As usual, right. It's the woman who now gets the short end of the straw. It's saying to the guy, you really shouldn't say no if she wants it. And now she, well, so then you can't even ask.
Right.
You gotta think about that.
Right. As opposed to saying, he has a mitzvah to have sex with you when you want to have sex, and therefore you should let him know. And that's a big mitzvah, and you know.
Right. Now, and it also just it stifles communication.
And exactly. Understand that he may say, you know, I can't, like, I'm so overwhelmed, but how about tomorrow? Like, right. There's ways to not say no also without having sex right then and there.
Correct. Correct. Right.
You know, I was curious if that, the idea that the woman cannot ask for sex because it's natsanua, if that translates into other things as well, of asking for things she wants, like other things, not sex.
Oh, well, so first of all, again, I would sort of say demand, you know, and sort of like brazenly demand is Batsheva said, or that's certainly how some poskim state it because of the counterexample of Leah. It is in one source, I think, Avos to Rebbe Nassan, it's more, if I'm remembering correctly, it is more generalized about how, you know, men are the sort of ones that are aggressive and are clear about their needs and demand them, and women have to more be, you know, sort of a little indirect and so on.
That's descriptive, also, not prescriptive, right?
Which also plays
but
on,
then it says, and this is a good character trait of women. So look, right. This gets to a larger discussion.
And it also plays up the idea of women as manipulative, though.
We could do a whole
and
episode
it's also,
just on this.
Just back to that question about asking for sex or demanding sex. You know, my experience of couples is that I often hear from men that it's really nice for them when they feel like the women are interested and the women are not only responsive, but also sometimes they're the ones who are initiating.
Exactly.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah, and that's also really important. There's a big difference between initiating and demanding. Again, the Talmud makes it clear that using the Leah example, that if the woman can initiate and send all these signals and even say things, you know, just not a type of a brazen demanding. Right.
So there are modest ways to ask, and there are also nice ways to defer rather than saying no.
There are reasonable ways to ask. Yeah. I wouldn't even use the word modest. I think the word modest is going to... Right. There's just, like, lovely ways to ask, and then there's obnoxious ways to ask. Right. Same for the man and the woman.
Right.
Right. Right.
Okay, so the next one, which I hadn't heard either, was you cannot have sex if you're a guest in someone else's house. So sleeping over.
I heard this. Have you ever heard this one, Batsheva?
Nope.
Okay, so there is a passage in the Talmud that says that it's the story about Elkanah and Hannah, which we read on Rosh Hashanah, and it says that when they went home after they brought their sacrifices and after she encountered the priest Eli, prayed for a son. Anyway, they went home. It says, and she conceived a child. So the Talmud says, you see, only after they went home. And from here we learn.
Because it was assuming that they were in Jerusalem. Right.
Right.
And they were assuming they were in Jerusalem. And while they were in Jerusalem and she was there bringing sacrifices and praying, that they weren't staying in their own house. They were staying at somebody else's house. So only when they went home, they conceived the child.
Although the temple wasn't in Jerusalem at that time, but yes, that's
okay,
correct.
Okay, sorry.
Right. So here you see that if somebody is a guest, they should not be having sex. They should only have sex in their home. So interestingly.
Wait.
Yes.
You realize that's a leap.
Yeah.
Not in somebody else's home or only in their home. Those are two different things.
That's true. That is true. The Talmud just says,
how about an Airbnb or a hotel?
You're right. The Talmud just says a guest in someone's home.
Right.
So, which is interesting, right? Maybe who says they were guests? Maybe they rented a hotel when they were there. Ravid explains that this is specifically out of concern that the owner, that the host will walk into the room. And often everybody shared a room. So it might even be, you're sharing one big room with the host. It's somebody else's house. You're going to walk in, in the room without announcing themselves. And therefore says that when that's not a concern and
there's
a lock on the door or whatever, you just know because that the way the host is that they obviously are not going to interrupt you, and walk into the room unannounced. That it's not a problem, and this is the way the Shulchan Aruch rules. So actually, it's not a problem as long
Total
as you know
myth.
That somebody is going not going to walk in. Except Rambam seems to quote the Gemara without any qualification, and might feel like if you're not doing it at home, maybe it shows you're too much engaging in sex too much. It's more of a domestic activity. Control yourself when you're out on the road. I don't know, but sometimes people anyway. But it's actually not a halacha. It is a myth.
Good to know. Next time you go,
I was going to say, anybody comes to my house for Shabbos, I won't walk in on you. So
the next one is you cannot have sex with Sepharim in the room.
Uh-huh. So that one I think is true, actually. Mm-hmm.
What do you think?
Yeah, okay, I'm going to go with true.
So the Talmud tells a story about a rabbi who was having sex in a room, and another rabbi happened to see it actually was a story that he had just gotten married and was having a hard time consummating the marriage. Some other rabbi was checking out the room, and he saw that there was a Sefer Torah there, and he said, you know, you almost endangered yourself by having sex in a room with a Sefer Torah present. So somehow understanding that somehow it will lead to some, spiritual damage by doing that. And then the Talmud goes into a whole halachic discussion about how to cover up the Torah in order that, you know, put it behind a barrier, put it in a different room, two covers.
Cover it,
but you need two covers and so on. So that's a Sefer Torah. What about, what about other types of books? So
Sfarim.
Right. So there's a general, right, religious books. So there's a general assumption that it's also the problem, but it's not as severe, like maybe one cover is enough. You don't need a wall behind it, some type of a double cover. You can put a sheet over your bookcase because maybe the binding, is cover number one and the sheet is cover number two. But interestingly, while many poskim argue on what I'm about to say, there are some poskim who say that it doesn't apply to printed sfarim. That it's only things that when they were handwritten, they have real sanctity. Mm. And then, there's some problem of having that together in a room that, that sex is going on, but that printed Sfarim is not an issue. So if somebody, to go back to the first one, to the previous myth, is a guest in someone's house and there's Sfarim in the room and they don't want to start hanging up a sheet over the Sfarim, which maybe they could do, one, I think, can certainly when it's necessary, rely on those opinions. You can be a really good host and put a sheet over the Sfarim in your guest room.
Well, this is a similar but very different question. You cannot have sex with pets in the room. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that's fact.
Batsheva?
I don't ever think the halacha took animals seriously enough to worry about them.
I think feels a little bit like
it's not sanua, so we can talk about that, and I can talk about when I talk to patients about that. Uh-huh. Not that sanua piece,
I'm not
but
a pet person, though,
but I would bet that's totally not a halachic thing.
So you are correct, but actually the Talmud entertains it momentarily. There's a statement in the Talmud that says it is forbidden to have sex before other creatures. So the Talmud says before other creatures, you mean like animals? That's crazy. What do they know about what's going on? And it says, no, it means like it shouldn't be in front of your slaves or servants, And I think sometimes you see this on these like period dramas where like people almost treat servants as if they're like not even there, and they do. Mm-hmm. So there it says that you should not do, but in front of animals, it's not a problem. The halacha is also that even in front of a sleeping baby, it's not a problem, or a baby that's too young to know what's going on. I know some people have their baby sleep with them, and that's actually not a problem also. There is a story in the Talmud that some rabbis sort of made sure to get rid of the flies in the room, and some want to say that maybe they were being strict about this idea of animals in the room, but others say, no, they just didn't want flies
yicky.
In the room.
It
was too distracting. It wasn't actually about some other creature looking at you. But I think if there's a dog watching you, that's got to be pretty weird.
So I would think so too, with my, from sensibilities, would feel like it just didn't feel modest to me. But I cannot tell you how many patients I've had who keep animals in their room who don't seem to think it's a big deal, other than the animals start barking, the dogs that are jealous or want to climb on the bed with them.
So it might just not be a good idea.
So I did a blog post on this. I tell clients, they need to keep the animals out of the bedroom at night. Or if they let them into sleeping, if they need to do that. But yes, it is really, it's a real issue to talk about because it really gets in the way of people's sex lives.
So it's one area where halacha could have been a little bit, we could have
gotten on board with that, right?
Well, I feel like I've learned a lot and cleared up a bunch of
this
stuff.
This is so much fun. We should do this every few months.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun. Have to come up with more
myths.
Send in.
You have more myths and questions like this? Send them in.
If you've heard other myths, please pass them in. If we haven't already.
How would you know it's a myth? Maybe you're assuming it's a fact.
Exactly. Or something where, you know, you can imagine.
You're wondering, you is this really true?
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks so much. This was really fun. Sure. We'll be back after this brief word from our sponsor.
Listeners of this podcast know all about Maze Women's Health and its therapeutic services, but you may not know that Maze also has a first-class cord blood bank. As parents, we want to do everything we can to see our children grow up strong and healthy. Banking your baby's cord blood is one way to protect them, now and in the future. Maze offers the highest quality banking at the lowest cost and is FDA approved and accredited. The best science at the best value. Learn more at mazecordblood.com.
So now it's really, unfortunately, time for us to say goodbye to you, Rebecca.
Well, that was really fun. I'm glad to end on such a fun note with you all.
We're really going to miss you.
But working with you in general was a lot of fun. And one of the things that I really appreciated about you, and I think this was really true about our listeners, was that you asked like really good questions. You made really thoughtful comments. And it's just great having somebody who not only did that, but kept us in line. Because Rebecca did all the behind-the-scenes work. And whenever we kind of got out of control.
Yeah, these guys, really out of control.
You did a good job reining us in.
Yes. Thank you. That really means a lot to me, and it's really been such an honor and a pleasure working with both of you, and I've learned a lot. So just as a listener and as a colleague, it's been really, really amazing, and I'm sorry to leave, but
you'll keep hearing us.
I have some other duties called, so
okay. You'll keep hearing us.
You'll be a regular
listener. And I'm excited to hear what you have in store for next season. I know you've got some other good people who are going to be working on this.
Yeah. And, great new producer.
New producer and new moderator. If you're curious about the new moderator, you have to tune in September. What we really would like is if over the summer, you guys write in thoughts, questions, comments, topics you'd like us to cover, old episodes you think it's time for us to reprise. The more we hear from you, the better.
Right. Well, on behalf of all of us, have a great summer.
And if you're looking for it to listen to over those long summer days, we have all of Joy of Text. You can listen to them again, do Chazara. And I've got a new podcast out, Egress Moshe A to Z. So if you would like to hear what Rav Moshe Feinstein says on a wide range of topics, from America to birth control to conversion to denominations all the way to Z, tune into that and tell your friends about us.
If you have questions or comments for The Joy of Text, you can contact us anonymously at thejoyoftext.org or send a regular email to joyoftextpodcast@gmail.com. You can listen and subscribe to The Joy of Text on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or any podcast app. And keep up to date with the latest news by following us on Facebook or Twitter. Show your support by giving us a positive rating and spreading the word about The Joy of Text. Thanks for listening.